Get loud.
I really don't understand your question. I don't know if I can't hear or you guys can't talk in the mic or whatever.
Get crazy.
You go find them. You throw your arms around them. You give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Get nuts.
Get up, baby. Get up. Oh, yeah. It's gone.
It's the Cube Show.
This is that all-born radio.
I'm a good person.
Man, y'all take it easy down there on the off, baby.
God want us to win the world championship.
You're doing it wrong. You're doing the wrong things.
Is anybody else tired or is it just me?
Hey, legitimate question, though.
Okay.
I'm drunk right now.
Wow.
Another one!
I?
And now, Cole Kublick.
He is bad Auburn man.
For your phone restore call of the day, if you dropped your phone or iPad and have the dreaded spider web going across the screen, is your computer not working quite the way you want it to, you can bring it to the guys at Phone Restore. Most repairs are done in less than 1 hour, located at 900 Bob Wallace Avenue. You can visit them online, the old internet, try it out, phonerestore.com. Cole, last night was the end of an era for the Nashville Predators, at least the 2016-17 era, as the Predators lose and Peter Laviolette, the head coach, laments.
As the Penguins on their bench start to celebrate for the second straight season, the Pittsburgh Penguins are the Stanley Cup champion. Helmets, sticks, gloves flying everywhere as the Penguins mob Matt Murray, the first back-to-back Stanley Cup champs since the 97 and 98 Detroit Red Wings.
Our guys' hearts are heavy right now. Everybody's is. And, you know, we'll move forward and we'll talk about different things. But I'm proud of the guys and the way that they played. I'm proud of the team that we became. And I'm proud of the way they responded after Game 5 in the game tonight. We hate the result, but our guys gave a pretty good effort. And it's difficult for us right now because our sights were set on winning a championship like anybody would be when you get to this point. And for that, it's disappointing.
So close. Just two wins away from possibly getting that championship. And rightfully so, had a gripe after a disallowed goal because of an early whistle when Colton Sissons clearly was poking in a goal, said no goal, cannot review it, even though maybe the rule says it is reviewable, would have given the Predators a 1-0 lead early in the second period. Instead, with 95 seconds to go, I'm trying to be a professional here, Cole.
Try harder.
Patrick Hornquist goes off the back of Pekka Rinne and with 95 seconds to go gives Pittsburgh the 1-0 advantage and then they win. And now we all had to lament because we had a chance. We had a chance to get a championship here in the Southeast. I don't know if Clemson's considered the Southeast. Is South Carolina part of the Southeast?
Yeah. South Carolina Gamecocks are in the Southeastern Conference.
Technically.
Speaking of the Southeast, there were some intriguing happenings down south of us in Florida over the weekend. Did you see where Alabama head coach Nick Saban was hanging out this weekend?
Was it the Preds game? Because I assumed he's a huge Preds fan. He should have been in Pittsburgh and then now in Nashville.
No, actually, he was down in Tampa. Made his way into
the championship game was over. I don't know why he's back there.
Morsani Football Practice Complex. That's where South Florida does their deal.
Oh, okay.
And Nick Saban stepped onto his first satellite camp.
Oh, no! Oh, the game done changed, Cole.
Charlie Strong's one-day mini camp attracted a couple hundred recruits. Saban offered no instruction nor a group speech, but did seek out a handful of notable campers and met with them to the side. Onward athlete Jerome Ford, Warren Thompson, also those were deemed 3- and 4-star prospects by 24/7 Sports. Brent Key and Mike Loxley were there with Saban. They got some FaceTime with 6'6 Berkeley Prep four-star offensive tackle Nicholas Petit-Frere.
What do you think they were talking about?
Talking about Nick Saban going to satellite camps.
No, but what do you think they were talking about on the side, Nick Saban and these recruits?
Predators, Penguins, who's going to
get the win? That's what I thought. They're like, hey, have you been keeping up with the Stanley Cup playoffs? It's wild, isn't it?
Apparently Saban wasn't finished there. He was headed to Butch Davis's FIU camp as well. So double dip, twin bill on Saturday for Nick Saban when it came to satellite camps.
I don't know if you're feeling this, Cole, because I'm a little dizzy right now. That's because the tables, man, they've been turned on us, man. Nick Saban not only going to – you know what I like the most about this, and I know we're going to get deeper into it. The thing I like the most is he's going to these satellite camps almost reluctantly. Like, I'm not teaching. I'm not talking. I'm not coaching anybody. I'm just here to cherry pick players.
That's it. The only thing I'm here to do is to pull the elite prospects to the side and have conversations with them.
It'd be like, would you like to come to Alabama?
Not doing anything else. No, I'm not talking to your corners about how to take a proper drop in press man coverage.
Remember when this whole thing, when we were talking last year, about these satellite camps, especially when Jim Harbaugh came to the fray, that we were talking about, hey, these are chances to get instructed by high-level coaches.
Oh, yeah. That's the whole point of them, Marky.
One of the biggest points was, and then Nick Saban, maybe one of the highest-level coaches at least one position, is like, nah, if we're going to do this thing, I'm going to do it on my terms.
Yeah.
Which is not here to
not
coach.
Not teaching anybody anything.
Which is amazing to think about, because he clearly still does not want satellite camps. But if there are going to be satellite camps, he's not going to be left behind. He's just going to cherry pick guys off of other satellite camp rosters.
No, it's crazy to think about. But I guess it'll be effective for me. That's FaceTime with recruits that he wasn't going to be able to have under the rules, regular rules of recruiting. So.
What do you think of him doing this? Do you think that it's just him, like, do you think he still hates this idea like I do, but just is doing it because, you don't want to be left behind?
No, he still...
You don't
still,
want anybody else to have an advantage?
He still doesn't have him. He's not going to allow anybody else to get a leg up on him and have an advantage over him. No, definitely not. And if somebody said, if Brent Key or Mike Loxley went to him and said, listen, we got our number three tackle, our number four athlete, and our number one running back are going to be at this camp. Let's go. Do I have to coach? No, you can just stand there.
Technically, but most of the coaches do a little bit.
Some guy tweeted a photograph, and it was literally like on the other side of the fence, like like in the corridor, like a covered portion of where you would enter the school, and like he and Saban are just over there talking. It's so stupid. I mean, come on, guys.
Nick Saban may be the, like, Jim Harbaugh's out there playing shirtless tag with recruits and players. and Nick Saban's like, bring me him. Bring me him. And bring me him.
I'll meet you in the covered portion of the gymnasium.
And I would expect nothing less from Nick Saban, really. I mean, he's a guy that's efficient with his time, wants to make sure every second is used wisely, doesn't like the waste of the time, hates this rule, hates that this is allowed. But if it's going to be allowed, let's go to an area of the country where it's going to have several hundred recruits total for both those camps.
Yeah. Let's get some of these guys that we're trying to get.
Yeah. Let's get some one-on-one time. Let's bring in a big old tackle. I think I saw a photograph of one of the tackles with him over the weekend.
Think about Charlie Strong, though. He held another mini camp the next day, and Urban Meyer and Dan Mullen showed up to that camp. That's got to be good for South Florida, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I know they're not getting any of those kids over at those other schools, but that had to help him get kids to his camp knowing that those other coaches were going to be there. And how does that begin to work in the landscape of recruiting? No, I want that kid. Well, yeah, but I'm from Ohio State. But this is my camp. We don't care. We're here to pillage your recruits from you at your camp.
Well, don't expect a Christmas card from me this year.
I mean, think about that. There has to be kids at this camp that Charlie Strong legitimately thinks he can get. You don't think Mississippi State and South Florida are battling for some kids? Oh, I now think Alabama and Ohio State are getting who they want to get. That's okay.
Right. There are very few guys that are like, man, I just love Coach Strong. I just love that guy.
Tampa, that's the place for me.
I mean, have you seen some of these strip bars? I haven't. I'm not legally able to yet, but I've heard about them. This is crazy here.
You seen that pirate ship where we're going to play our game?
Seriously? We have a pirate ship?
Yeah.
When can I sign? When's the early signing period start?
So, yeah.
I'd like to sign yesterday.
But you have to consider it is a little bit odd, the stance that Nick Saban took on satellite cams and is now hanging out at them.
Was there part of you that ever thought, just for the principle of it, he's just not going to do it? Because he does so well recruiting anyway.
No, not if it's going to give him an advantage. But this is no different.
Does he think
this is no different than SEC Media Days? Was it 3 years ago when he was talking about the number of plays being run, how unsafe it was, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden Lane Kiffin's in there and they're up tempo, hurry up, no huddle, high speed,
but
highfalutin offense.
It's one fancy offense is going out here. Do you think these RPOs? These are just crazy, high society types. Do you think, though, that he legitimately thinks there's a disadvantage to him based on the recruiters he's got on staff and always has on staff and based on how Alabama's been a nationally recruiting program? It's been number one basically for a decade. Do you think he thinks that there is a legitimate disadvantage that he should spend some of his time going to one of these camps, even if it is just poke out guys and be like, come here?
Yeah, I think that this is just – I think he wants every advantage possible, and he knows that FaceTime with these recruits is the most valuable thing you can have. That's why the whole bump rule was invented. And if this is a way for him to show up somewhere, talk to a couple recruits for 10, 15 minutes apiece, time he's not going to get otherwise, then it's worth it. Let Brent Key go teach people. Let Mike Locksley go teach and instruct. This is valuable, valuable, fundamental time for these campers.
You think Nick Saban wants to teach two-star guys?
They're not. He's not teaching anybody anything. All right, let's get to 10 after tweets. Brought to you by First Family Mortgage. Go to 1FMC.com.
Bring me the tweet!
Why would I teach someone who's not going to be on my roster?
Frank Smith at JRogers0602 tweets at Cube Show. Since Preds lost and series is over, are we done listening to Arky defend bandwagon fans? I don't know.
Well, the bandwagon fans are gone now, if that helps. But no, what's the big deal? You want a winner. Everybody, why? Clemson's going to get, Auburn got more fans when they won a national championship. Alabama got more fans when they were winning national championship again. The Yankees, the Dodgers, whenever they win divisions and get to the World Series, if that ever happens again. The Nationals, the Cubs got a ton of bandwagon fans. I know everybody thinks that you should love your team win, lose, or draw. But sometimes people just want winners because they don't want to be depressed enough. My best friend is a huge Braves fan. He's been miserable forever. He had a long time where they were winning the division. But it's been a while since he's been happy.
Well, that was his decision that he made. He hopped on that bandwagon and guess what?
No. He from being like a six-year-old, he's been a Braves fan. You can't call him a bandwagon. You can call me a bandwagon, but I was like 8 when I first became a Yankees fan.
Josh Newberg at Josh Newberg 247 tweets, I'm told Nick Saban showing up at USF and FIU camps today is in response to Urban Meyer appearing at FAU satellite camp. Oh boy, here we go.
That's right.
Urban's going to go see Lane? I'll go see Charlie.
Right. That's what we're going to do. And by the way, what if you don't have a team in that sport? Like, I don't really have a team in the NHL, so what's wrong with being a bandwagon fan of the Preds when they're winning? I don't have a team in that sport. I have a baseball, football, basketball team. I'm not gonna root for the Celtics or the Bulls if they're in the championship. I'll root for the Knicks forever, but if I don't have a team in that sport, why not? Just glam on.
Did you say glam on?
Yeah, just okay, glom on, whatever. Glam's kind of the type of hairband I guess you can do. Glom on to them, be like, love me some Preds. Or just enjoy them. You don't have to be the fan. You can just be rooting for them. It doesn't mean you're a Preds fan forever. Okay, now I'm done defending bandwagon fans.
All right, we'll get to a break. When we come back, come back, excuse me, Matt D'Agostino is going to join us to talk Game 5 of the NBA Finals tonight, next on Cube Show. Welcome back in. Cube Show Sports Radio 730 and 1039 The Yump. I want to welcome in Matt D'Agostino again. Works at Turner Sports. He covers the NBA. Game 5 coming up tonight. Matt, does Cleveland have to be close to what they were offensively in Game 4 to continue this series, in your opinion?
They've got to be relatively close. I don't expect them to set the kind of record they were setting with 49 points in a quarter and 24 threes and all of that stuff, but they've definitely got to bring their A game. I don't see them beating Golden State with anything other than their A game these days. While I don't think they need to light up the scoreboard quite as they did the other day, they're going to have to score 110, 115, 120 points if they're going to beat the Warriors on the road.
I mean, the obvious response here would be, well, they just made more threes, and you know, they set a record for a finals game, most threes in a game. But other than that, was there a big adjustment or even just an adjustment in general offensively that you saw for the Cavs, or was it just as simple as, hey, they knocked down shots in games 1 through 3? They really didn't.
The shots definitely helped. I think there was just a complete attitude change. I didn't notice any adjustments in terms of X's and O's and that sort of thing. They came out with a real great start, and they punched Golden State right in the mouth early on. And then you didn't see them back down. Physically, you saw all the Draymond Green antics and Zaza Pachulia and all of that stuff, and Cleveland really didn't back down at all. In fact, they were right there to go back at Golden State when those things came up. So I think it was more of an attitude change and we're not going out like this kind of development there from Cleveland. I don't know whether that's just a one game kind of thing where they say, all right, we're not getting swept, and then they come out and lay an egg tonight. I don't know. But Tyronn Lue even said, we were nice in games 1 through 3. We were too nice. So to get back to being physical and having a little attitude and having the swagger of a national champ, kind of helps things out in games 4 as well.
Talking with Matt D'Agostino, follow him on Twitter at MattDags28. You mentioned that attitude change and shift for the Cleveland Cavaliers. One guy who I felt like, at least from game 3 to 4, was very different was Tristan Thompson. Now, not completely filling up the box score, maybe like a Kyrie or a LeBron, but did some of the things early on that it seemed like he was just absent from the floor in game 3. How big a piece of the puzzle is he for the Cavs tonight continuing this series?
Yeah, he's huge. I mean, you look at the contract he signed, I don't know whether it was last year or the year before, and you're like, Tristan Thompson's getting that kind of money? I mean, now we look at it and we're saying everybody's getting the kind of money Tristan Thompson got. But at the time, he's like, okay, you're a nice player. You're getting more than you probably should get. But you look at the things he does, and he's invaluable to that team. The offensive rebounding, the energy, the ability as a big man to switch on a pick and roll and stay in front of a Steph Curry or a Klay Thompson, he can do that much better than the average big man. So those are the kinds of things that, while LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin Love are firing away from deep and LeBron's getting to the tin, it's Tristan Thompson's energy. It's that put-back tip-in. It's the offensive rebound to gain an extra possession and kick it out to somebody for an open three. Those are the things that make Tristan Thompson so valuable to Cleveland. And if he doesn't play well, they really don't have anybody else on that roster that can do the sort of things that he does.
Steve Kerr was saying during game 3 that LeBron and company could not keep that pace and that we're going to be with them when it gets to the end. Well, in game 4, the pace was so frenetic and the shots, so many of them were going down that obviously that wasn't going to be able to be the same. Cole asked you about the pace and if they're going to have to play nearly the same. And LeBron has already said we're not going to try to slow them down. What is ideal conditions offensively for Cleveland? What number do they need to be hitting to be able to win this game coming up tonight?
Yeah, I think it's in that 110 to 120 range. I don't think the Cavs are necessarily built or would even prefer to really slow it down, like a Utah Jazz team or somebody like that who really wants to control the possessions and really milk the shot clock when they can. I think they are a high-energy team. When you've got LeBron and Kyrie and JR and those guys kind of filling the wings, you want to get out and run, absolutely. It comes down to playing some defense and getting some turnovers that can create some transition opportunities for them that allow them to push the pace. But I think it's going to have to be 110 to 120 if they want to win, just because Golden State's too potent. You're not going to hold them under 100. You're doing a pretty good job if you hold them under 105 or 110. So I think the Cavs, while I don't necessarily see it as playing into Golden State's hands by upping the pace, because the Cavs are certainly capable of doing that and winning in that fashion, they've got to find a way to stop Golden State from at least, if you're under 110, you can try and get away as long as you're playing up to standards on the offensive end as well.
For LeBron and company, what is, I would assume, what is the best case scenario, I guess, tonight defensively to be able to try to, I don't want to say slow them down, but to limit Golden State? I mean, what matchup, who do you like on whom to be able to sort of slow down Golden State enough?
Yeah, I mean, I think being able to slow down two of Golden State's three scorers in Durant and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, like they did in game four, Curry and Thompson had off games for them. And Durant got his, but I think he was 9 for 22 from the floor, so he didn't have a good shooting night. LeBron needs to be the guy to step up, and whether it's on KD or if somebody else gets going and you know, they need to slow somebody else down like a Curry or Thompson, LeBron's going to be the one to kind of get that started. I would imagine LeBron's going to spend the bulk of his time on Kevin Durant if he can. And then you're looking at guys like Iman Shumpert and J.R. Smith who are going to have to lock up Klay Thompson and Steph Curry along the way. And Kyrie, while he's not the greatest defender in the world, has got the speed and the energy to keep up with Steph as much as he can. So I think LeBron is the catalyst for a lot of that defensive stuff. And then I'll go back to Tristan Thompson in terms of just doing the dirty work on the glass and limiting Golden State's offensive rebounding.
He is Matt D'Agostino of NBA.com. Matt, what is the difference in this year's 3-1 series versus last year's 3-1 deficit for Cleveland?
Mentally, psychologically, I think it's that 3-0 lead that Golden State had. So whereas last year we're sitting here and saying nobody's ever come back from 3-1 to win an NBA championship, and Cleveland goes ahead and does it, now it's 3-0. And no matter what the sport is, you hear down 3-0, you think series is a wrap. It's over and done with. So I think psychologically that 3-0 advantage is the big difference. And I think, the biggest thing to me that changed the series last year was Draymond Green getting suspended for game five. I think Golden State allowed that sliver of hope to Cleveland to get back into it, force a game six, and go back home. So, tonight's game is very pivotal, because if Cleveland ends up extending the series tonight, now it's 3-2 going back to Cleveland, you say, okay, Cleveland's got a shot to at least extend it to game seven, being at home, and then, and roll out the dice and see what happens on a game seven. But I think that 3-1 advantage versus 3-0 advantage, I think, is a little more daunting task when you look at it in terms of the big picture.
Matt, you said relatively Cleveland needs to be similar to what they were on offense to Friday night. What needs to go their way offensively early on, in your opinion? Not necessarily to match that, because multiple records were set, and even you yourself said they didn't need to be that team. But if it's going to go Cleveland's way offensively, and they're going to find a way to win this game and extend this series, on that side of the ball, what needs to happen first and foremost for the Cavs?
I think it all comes down to shot-making with those guys. Those guys, when they get going, Kyrie, Kevin Love, we saw J.R. Smith in game four hitting a step-up 35-foot three-pointer off a feed. Those kinds of things, they are a very streaky shooting team in terms of that. So if Kyrie and JR can start hitting some shots early on, especially if LeBron's hitting threes, and that's kind of when things are going well for them, because LeBron, when he can get the three ball going, and then you have to take that away and he can get to the basket, he's pretty much unguardable at that point. But I think it comes down to three-point shooting. That's what got them in rhythm early on in game four. And no, they don't need to make the 24 that they did the other night. But I think getting those shots early and getting them to fall kind of gets them confidence early on the road in a hostile environment.
LeBron has played so well in this series overall, but on the other side, so has someone like Kevin Durant. Is there any case that could be made, especially if they're able to win game five tonight and make it at least a six-game series and LeBron plays well again, can there be any legitimate case made that LeBron on a team that loses 4-2 is the MVP of the series?
I find it tough. Maybe if it's a 7-game series, something like that, but I'm kind of a guy who's in the boat of, if one team wins the championship, let's find the MVP from that team. Seems to be more valuable in there. And KD, not averaging a triple-double in this series like LeBron is, but KD has been every bit as effective and even more clutch, I would say, for the Warriors in this series. So much so that certain people, and I don't think I'm one of those at this point, but certain people are already starting to debate now, is Kevin Durant the best player in the NBA? So I don't think LeBron, even though he's been great, I don't know what else he can really do in this series, but I don't think if Cleveland loses this series, I don't think LeBron's your MVP.
I probably tend to agree with you. I mean, if this was maybe a couple of years ago and LeBron had no Kevin Love and had no Kyrie and it's basically just him, but there's a KD on the other side that's playing really good basketball too, so I guess I'd sort of lean with you too that if there was just a bunch of guys averaging 17 points a game during the finals, maybe. But Kevin Durant's kind of playing out of his mind, too.
Yeah, I mean, you don't see that. He's in the realm of top 5, top 10 player in the NBA, always in that discussion. But when you start hearing KD, is he better than LeBron now? Is he the best player in the NBA? Those kinds of conversations, he's kind of elevated his status here in the last 6 weeks during this playoff run.
Well, Matt, I'll let you leave on this. How do you think tonight's Game 5 goes?
I think we are celebrating, or the NBA is celebrating a champion tonight. I think Golden State gets their second title in the last 3 seasons. Too much firepower, too potent, and too much of a hill to climb for Cleveland, rather. I think the Warriors are cutting down nets tonight.
Do you think it's a competitive game?
I'll say competitive in the 8 to 10 point range, something along those lines. I think Cleveland, their backs are against the wall, obviously, and we saw how they came out in game four at home. I don't expect that same kind of fire and that energy and success early on in this game on the road, but I don't think Cleveland's going down without a fight. I don't think, I don't think a LeBron James-led team, a defending champion like that, I don't think they go out without giving it their best shot and making it a competitive game. Like I said, Golden State, it's their time. They've got too much firepower. I think they take home a title tonight.
He is Matt D'Agostino of NBA.com on Twitter at MattDags28. Thank you so much for the time, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Arky.
Thanks, Matt. Matt D'Agostino on Twitter, MattDags28 on the old Twitter sphere, if you want to give him a follow. It's been great for us for the last couple months of the season, and then the playoffs. Good to get him on as well. We're going to take a quick timeout. We'll come back with the joke of the day. If you've not been paying attention, Stand Up Live in Huntsville has been putting together quite the calendar of comedians coming to town. And one of those coming to town this week is a name we don't know much from comedy, but been doing it for the last few years. Steve-O is in town. And go ahead and warn you now. If you have little kids, I'm going to bleep out everything I can, but you'll probably get the context. Plug the ears when we come back. Back live here in the Cube Show. Welcome back in on a Monday morning. It's time for the joke of the day now, brought to you by Stand Up Live in beautiful Huntsville, Alabama. That's over there on the corner of Governors and the Parkway. You see the place. I mean, it's a beautiful club. I don't know if you've had a chance to be in it yet, but it's just absolutely beautiful. It looks great. The sound is great. The food is great. It is a great date night to have a lot of fun. You will not be disappointed. And I don't promise a lot on this show other than Alabama victories, because it seems like that's all that happens. But I do promise you'll have a great time at Stand Up Live. You can check out their calendar of events coming up, including Nate Bargatze next week. Bruce Bruce is coming in the week after. And by the way, the week after this Sunday, so on the 25th, Comedy Mayhem is doing a Stand Up Live showcase, and I will be doing that show. I will be performing, so you get to see me do some comedy. If you missed a chance for me to do if you missed a chance, that chance to see me do it a few weeks ago at Stand Up Live, June 25th. It's a Sunday, the 7 p.m. show. It's a relatively painless show, if that makes sense, time-wise. You won't be out till midnight. 7 p.m. show, great food, great drinks, and me bringing the funny. But who's bringing the funny this week is Steve-O. That's right, Steve-O from Jackass fame is a stand-up comedian now. I've been doing it for a few years, and he brings us our joke of the day.
Another thing you guys probably don't know about me, I'm a college graduate. That's right. I graduated from Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey Clown College, which was statistically harder to get into than Harvard. So naturally, I was very proud of my acceptance. When I was going to clown college, my cousin was going to mortician school, and our mothers were intensely debating whose son was a bigger loser. So I introduced Johnny Knoxville to my cousin one time, and old Knoxville said to him, "You ever, you know, with a dead body?" And my cousin just went, "I don't know what that means, man. I don't know. I don't know if my cousin ever had sex with a dead body or not, but I damn well f***ed a clown." Yeah.
The Steve-O, who will be in town this week starting Thursday. He has six shows, one on Thursday, two Friday, two Saturday, and one on Sunday as well. A bunch of chances to be able to see the worldly, and I do mean worldly in a strange enough way, when you think of him on Jackass and the Wild Boys. And boy, that's some kind of career, huh? That's some kind of career, to be able to staple body parts of your own together and to be able to make a lot of money doing that. That's some kind of career to be able to have. But you can see him at Stand Up Live. And rumor has it, and don't have this confirmed, but he used to do stand-up where he only did jokes, but some people expected him to do something kind of crazy. So now in a lot of his shows, not all of them, I'm not 100% sure guaranteeing that, but I think most of them, he does some kind of funny, and I mean crazy funny, near the end of his show. So if you're ready for chaos, Steve-O can bring you a little bit of funny and some chaos. Get your tickets right now. StandUpLive.com is the website, and you can check out that plus many, many more great comedians coming up over the next several weeks and next couple of months. I mean, they're booking things out to August, September, so get in, get early, and check it out. Quick time out. We come back, more of the Abbey Award-winning Cube Show next.
Back in the Southern RV Wholesale Studio, Arky, did you see the Olympics made news again over the weekend?
They finally got a real sport in, like bass fishing or something.
Wow. It's intriguing that Ice Cube brings us back from break right there with Today's a Good Day. Ice Cube recently started the Professional 3-on-3 Basketball League.
That's true.
Now the Olympics, I mean, Ice Cube apparently gets things done quick.
Why?
Because the Olympics are going to welcome in 3-on-3 basketball. Now, when I was a kid, we called this hoop it up. And they set up a bunch of goals down in 5 points in the south side. And you just made a 3-on-3 team and you competed for like $5,000.
Yeah, they did that up here too.
Yeah, and you never had a chance to win because people are always going to go get like these college flunky ringers that you didn't have and go out and be able to win. But, 3-on-3 in the Olympics. This seems really stupid.
Whoa. Hold on.
Since when are we taking like offsets of real sports and making them an Olympic event? Like, is Home Run Derby next? Like, I think the slam dunk contest would be more of an Olympic event than three-on-three basketball. Because a lot of Olympic events are already judged anyway. Gymnastics, you're judged. Figure skating is judged.
Listen, the decathlon.
Diving is judged.
The decathlon's a thing, but all of its little events are on.
Okay, well, maybe the skills competition should be an Olympic event then, where one guy, Chris Paul, runs around and does all his silly things, throwing the ball through a hoop and bouncing it off a net and trying to shoot a three.
Not against that at all.
This is dumb. This is really stupid.
You're a lot more willing to watch. You're going to be a lot more willing to watch this than you are most of the Summer Olympics.
Now, LeBron says he's not going to do it, but I'm thinking, I feel like this is an easy gold medal for you to pick up.
Sure, sure.
You can assemble your own team. Three-on-three team. Assemble!
Give me one other guy.
If you're LeBron, who are you taking?
On my team?
Do you?
I'm taking Durant.
I'm taking the guy that's torching me every week.
I'm going to take that guy. It's going to be me, Durant, and...
Wow, what if Thompson...
How much do you need a point at that?
What if Thompson, Curry, and Durant had a team? You almost couldn't defend that. They just sit outside and shoot.
And he's like, we're going to take this to the Olympics.
See, my question was going to be, if you're LeBron...
I think every NBA team should pick their three best players and make a three-on-three team.
Yeah,
and
that
send them to the Olympics.
That definitely ain't happening.
It's just send them to the
Olympics. Because LeBron does not want
to
play with anybody other than Kyrie, I promise. Kevin Love, no.
Oh, come on.
No. My question was going to be, let's say you're LeBron and you're going to assemble your 3-on-3 dream team. Do you get subs? Do you get a sub? Do you get a fourth? What if a guy rips an ACL?
Well, I guess that would have to be technically allowed.
Which brings me to power play that I want to discuss with you a little bit later in the show. Is power play not the weirdest thing in all of sports? Like, what other sports could even function down a man?
Well, soccer does it.
I said, what other sports could even
function
down a man?
What are you talking about? That's a total sport.
Basketball, maybe, with zone. But football, if you knowingly were going into a series and you were down a guy defensively, how would you even do that?
Well, some teams try to cheat and put 10 on 11 with their offense because they forget guys.
That's true. Back to 3-on-3. If you're LeBron, my question would be, are you adding one of these young big men to your 3-on-3 dream team, so to speak? Like, are you adding a Karl Anthony Towns? Do you even want a dude on the post? Or are you just going straight ball handlers, penetrators, scorers, shooters?
Well, I mean, if you have someone like a Giannis Antetokounmpo. Giannis Antetokounmpo?
The guy for the Bucks.
That guy. You have him. He's a big guy that can run the point. He's sort of a hybrid that way.
But yeah.
Yeah.
I don't view him as so much of a post-up guy. But do you even want that?
Like,
do you want to play the high-low game, like where LeBron dumps it down and then he kicks it back and dumps it down, like they used to do with Shaq and Hakeem and those guys?
Well, that's the strategy. Or do you just go rain it from downtown like you do the Splash Brothers?
Yeah, or guys who can cross you over. Now, I have a feeling that if LeBron did get into this, it would be him, Wade, and Paul, because they're like the boys, right? That's like their crew.
If you get a Nets back, I'm just going to bring my friends.
I feel like this is what it's going to be.
Also, Wade's 200 years old.
Good point. Back with more Cube Show next.